Well, children, that settles that, Briar said with a smile. The expression was more to unsettle the others than something genuine. This was a monumentally stupid plan, and he was about to cause all kinds of uproar when he waltzed into Gabriel City with Pete Wentz in tow. He didn't really want to think of what Schechter would do to him when he found out. Joe had been right, after all. Gerard didn't actually give a shit about Wentz's entourage, not beyond the possibility of being able to use them sometime in the future. Briar was fond of harassing them all, so that was really the only reason he kept bringing up the connection. Still, Briar thought, Gerard couldn't use them if one of them was dead. Maybe he could use that as his excuse. One look at Joe, at the stirrings of interest he felt as he took in the quick breathing, the frantic fluttering of his pulse, told him that, no, he wouldn't get away with that. Especially not when Gerard had already called him on it once before, had all but given him his dark little blessing. Joe, no, Pete said, crossing the room and grabbing his friend's arms in a tight grip. His fingers dug in deeply, in a grasp that Briar would have called cruel if it were anyone else. As it was, there was too much desperation in the act to really qualify. Joe winced a little as fingernails dug into his arm, but that must have been what Pete wanted, because the dazed look in Joe's eyes disappeared. It was replaced with a little bit of terror as everything sunk in. Maybe Joe should have thought of that before signing his future away. Of course, Briar had no intention of actually keeping the kid, not when humans proved to be such trouble in the long run. Joe didn't need to know that, though. Not yet. We really should be going, Briar said, cutting off whatever bullshit line Pete was about to deliver. He knew better than to offer false hope, but maybe Pete actually was stupid enough to think he could find some loophole in Joe's agreement. The thought was ridiculous. You lived or died by your word, no exceptions. I need to tell the others we're coming, and I don't trust you, Peter, not to do something rash. That means you're all coming back to the hotel with us. He looked around then, finally noticing that Pete was short a man. Whether or not you bring the other one is up to you, but I'll have to find you. But first things first, you're going to stop dosing Patrick with that shit. When was the last time you gave it to him? This afternoon, Joe said. We were going to give him more after Pete was done, but he calmed down on his own. There was worry in his eyes, and Briar could hear what he wasn't saying. They'd been afraid to keep drugging him. Brendan, see if you can get him to take a suggestion, John said, nodding toward Patrick's prone form. Brendan nodded and sat down beside him, taking a moment to look him over before trying something simple. He spoke out loud, presumably so the others would know what he was doing. Patrick, raise your arm. It took a moment, but he did. Now put it back down. He obeyed that suggestion, too. Briar had the impression that the young mesmerist would have amused himself with his puppet for a while longer, if not for John's impatient look. You're not going to attack any dandies, Patrick. No matter what you think you've seen, do you understand? Say it, Patrick, Brendan urged, his voice quiet but serious. I understand, he said softly. Good, Brendan said. He stood up and brushed off his trousers. I'll keep an eye on him, make sure the suggestion doesn't slip. Now that we have that out of the way, Briar said pointedly, looking at his watch, there are preparations to be made. Brendan made sure that Patrick was up on his feet, walking slowly between him and John. Pete hovered as close as he could, though John wasn't shy about pushing him away. Joe trailed behind the others, but Briar wasn't all that concerned about it, The kid wasn't going anywhere, not when his friend's well-being hung in the balance. Cabs were found, and they returned to the hotel. Briar should have known that things wouldn't be quite as easy as he'd hoped they'd be. As soon as they stepped off the elevator, they came face to face with Ryan, whose arms were laden with snacks from the nearby vending machine. Ordinarily, Briar was overwhelmingly in favor of needling the boy, scaring him without doing anything at all. But he didn't even get the chance to. Patrick got to him first. No one was expecting him to break away from them, to jump forward and grab Ryan's shoulders and shake him. "I know you," Patrick said, rising up on his tiptoes so his face was closer to Ryan's. His tone was part amazed, part confused. He looked around then, unsure of his surroundings. Briar watched as Patrick shook his head and turned his attention back to Ryan. "One thing at a time, then." "I know you from somewhere," Patrick insisted. "Interesting," Briar thought. Even in his mixed-up state, he still knows enough to recognize the one normal thing they left him with. "Of course you know me," Ryan said slowly, looking to the vampire still standing in front of the elevator. "What the..." Brendan made some sort of a signal, and Ryan's attention returned to Patrick. "From before," Patrick continued. "I know you from before, but..." The confusion was thick in his voice, and clearly written on his face. "You're not there. I've seen what happens, and you're not there." He broke off with a distressed sound, rubbing at his head as though that would help him to focus. "My head hurts," he said, clenching his eyes shut. Pete came forward, one arm outstretched, wanting to comfort. Patrick shuddered and pressed a little closer to Ryan, though Briar was convinced that was only because Ryan was standing in his way. "You're going to kill us all," Patrick said, his voice dulled, devoid of emotion. "You've already killed so many." "Well, at least he's not fighting you," Briar remarked. "Though words do get to the heart of the matter a lot faster." Pete ignored him. Briar hadn't expected anything else. "It's going to be an interesting flight, don't you think?" he continued. "The sedatives will be completely out of his system by then." A muscle twitched in Pete's cheek. It was an involuntary reaction, so Briar considered it a win. "Patrick, what happened?" Ryan asked, trying to get Patrick's attention focused back on him. At least that way he wouldn't be all but rocking back and forth, clawing at his head. "I don't know," Patrick replied after a minute, barely above a whisper. "It hurts to think." His voice broke a little, a sound that Pete echoed as he flattened himself against the elevator door. "I know what I saw. They can't say it's not real." "No one's saying that," Ryan assured him, though his eyes met Brendan's and it was clear that he had questions. "It hurts to think," Patrick repeated. "You need to sleep," Ryan said. "There's got to be a free room around here." This last was said to John, who nodded and pulled a slim cell phone from his inside breast pocket. He called down to the front desk and asked for the keys to the empty rooms on the floor. The staff moved quickly, and the elevator dinged not 2 minutes later. Pete stepped aside and let the young woman hand the keycard to John. John, in turn, handed it to Ryan. "Put him to bed," he told the boy. Ryan looked a little worried, but he didn't argue, instead looking at the number printed on the keycard's paper sleeve and setting off in that direction. As they walked away, they could hear Patrick mumbling. "It's all fuzzy. You're not." They left him outside the block, John said, watching as Ryan ushered Patrick into a suite. "That's why it's easier to focus on him than anything else." There was an unhappy set to Brendan's mouth. Briar couldn't blame him. Special attention like that was rarely a good thing. I don't even care that you've managed to piss someone off so monumentally that they decided to scramble Patrick's brain, Brendan said. But I will kill you if that person goes after Ryan next.
He turned to look at Briar then, and added,
Safe passage or no? Briar had never really thought much of Brendan Urey, but the cold anger in his eyes definitely would have boosted him up a few notches on the scale. If it hadn't been directed at Briar, that is. As it was, all that did was irritate him. Go and pack your bags, Brendan, John said. If Patrick can stay quiet with Ryan, then you two can give my regards to Gabriel. Brendan looked like he was going to argue, but in the end wisely kept shut. Briar wondered how much trouble he was going to have convincing Ryan to play along. Brendan always did give his boy too much freedom. As for you, John continued, turning his attention to Briar. Don't you have phone calls to make? People to inform? It was a dismissal. Briar was barely able to rein in his irritation at the insults. It just so happens I do, he said. Can't just spring this on them, can I? You could, John said. But Gabriel wouldn't be amused. Neither would Schechter. You know how he loves to make an entrance. Schechter. That was one conversation Briar wasn't looking forward to having. His grandsire had never looked favorably on betrayal. If you'll excuse me, Briar said, shouldering past Brendan as he headed for his own suite. There was no sense in putting off the coals any longer. There was an awkward moment of silence as Gerard took the time to process exactly what Briar had just told him. I don't think you quite understood me, Gerard said slowly. That time I gave you my valuable advice, I know I didn't tell you to keep them all. Briar, what the fuck? Briar pinched the bridge of his nose and tried to figure out how he was supposed to answer that. It was difficult when all he could think about was the last time he'd seen Gerard and had, apparently, received such stunning advice. In hindsight, Briar might have been a little mean with his latest kill. The wound in her throat was ugly, with no hope of healing, even if he'd wanted to send the young woman on her way. He wasn't prepared to take any blame for that. It was hardly his fault when she'd had eyes the same shade of blue as those he was trying to forget. Well, you've never been kind, but that's a new level of cruelty even for you, Gerard said. He hadn't even tried to hide his approach, so either he hadn't wanted to startle Briar, or he just didn't care. Neither option was appealing. I don't remember asking for a critique, Briar replied, turning from the dead body on the sidewalk so he could look the other vampire in the face. No, Gerard agreed. But you're getting one, and not just from me. Everyone's talking about it. Robert Briar and the one who got away. Gerard grinned, all but rocking back and forth on his feet. Briar had always loved Gerard's ability to find entertainment in the business of others. Funny how it seemed less amusing when it was his. Fuck off, Gerard, Briar said brusquely, turning away with no intention of continuing the conversation. He might have allowed himself to become an ally of Gerard Way, instead of demanding the respect and position his age and abilities gave him, but he absolutely refused to let him use it to his advantage in this instance. No, Gerard repeated. His tone of voice was curt, angry. It wasn't one that Briar heard often, especially not in relation to himself. He turned slowly, one eyebrow arched, and waited for Gerard to continue. If he's fucking with you this much, Briar, if you want him this much, go and get him. It's simple as that. You forget, Gerard, that I'm not looking to keep anyone, Briar said, his voice terse and angry. And Joe is not Frankie. He wouldn't take well to a leash.
Gerard brushed off the insult and continued to smile that irritating, knowing smile of his.
How do you know unless you try?
He asked.
I'm doing your job, Briar said tersely. Or did you forget that marking these misfits meant having to defend your claim, especially when word got out? I'm not stupid, Gerard snapped. And neither are you, so let's just get past the bullshit. You might be able to deflect John with that, but don't do it to me. You're right, Briar said, with a frustrated sigh. However, he didn't go so far as to apologize. I'll do the legwork while you're gone, Gerard said. I'll smooth things over and I'll play my part. This is more my mess than yours. I'm the one who marked them, after all, and there is responsibility there. But Schechter is yours, Robert. I am not going anywhere near that.
It was fair, Briar supposed. Not that it made him any happier.
That'll do, he said. I'm going to go break the news. If nothing else, we'll have a nice mystery to solve. Gabe loves those. Hopefully he loved them enough not to banish him on sight.
Pete had no idea how he managed to wait until the door was closed before he began tearing into the nearest object he could get his hands on. A framed print of a seascape. The original might have been pretty, but the print was poorly made. Really? For $1,200 a night, the hotel should have done better. Once the print was in pieces at his feet, Pete reached for the small chess table near the door. The fine mahogany wood splintered in his hand, the intricate inlay popping out as Pete's fingers worked to reduce it to so much rubble. A splinter of onyx-stained wood caught under his nail, but he barely felt it. It was easier to ignore the world when he was bent on destroying everything in it. He was moving toward the couch in the sitting room when he heard it. The unmistakable sound of feet hitting the balcony. If he'd been unsure of that, the feeling of being watched would no doubt have cleared that up. Pete turned toward the sliding glass doors, and was not at all surprised to see a dandy. It was the fact that it was the butcher, and that he was just standing there, casual as anything, that troubled him. "Tsk," Butcher said, shaking his head sadly. "Looks like John isn't going to get his security deposit back." Pete resisted the urge to look down at the mess he'd made. It was an effect the butcher had always had on him. Pete hadn't spent long at Beckett's side, but he'd been there long enough to develop a healthy fear of the other vampire. Could that be why he'd staked Siska when the fledgling hadn't really been much of a threat? A little bit of payback? Maybe that was overthinking it a little. Maybe he was just too proud to admit it, even in his own head. "What do you want, Andrew?" Pete asked, dealing an insult the only way he knew how, by refusing to use the nickname that had been well-earned. "Your head on my mantle," Butcher replied. "But since you're here as Briar's guest, I'll just have to settle for conversation." "Want to share some ice cream? Maybe braid each other's hair?" Pete asked. He moved away from the mess on the floor, suddenly conscious that he'd been watched in that moment of uncontrollable anger. "No," Butcher said with a smile. "But we can talk about boys if you like." That stopped Pete in his tracks. The casual way it was said sent a shiver down his spine.
Yeah, Pete said. It's a shame yours lived. It's sad that you have such lousy aim, Butcher said. I always wondered if your sloppy attacks on Beckett were just your way of asking to come home. But they weren't, were they? You're just that terrible at it. It's a wonder you've survived this long. Maybe I just wanted to show him that you couldn't protect him, Pete said, telling himself to keep hold of his temper, that there was no way he'd last long against a vampire this old without some kind of serious weapon. Well, you'd know all about that, wouldn't you? Butcher asked sweetly, a smile on his lips. Couldn't even keep your own voice safe from Gerard Way. It must have hurt so much to smell that son of a bitch all over him. And to think, he made you watch it. A muscle in Pete's jaw began to jump as Butcher spoke. He could see it so clearly. Could remember the exact moment that Patrick's scent changed, replaced with the unmistakable smell of another dandy. Joe and Andy, too, but everything was always so much harder with Patrick. What's it like, knowing that he doesn't belong to you? Butcher asked. He is mine, Pete ground out, voice like gravel. Your trip to Gabriel, your alliance with Briar, says otherwise, Butcher pointed out with glee. So does the fact that he's currently rooming with Ryan. He won't have anything to do with you. I hear that happens when you destroy the world. Pete reached out and shoved the Butcher hard enough to make him stumble. The elder vampire laughed. Pete, you're so easy, he said, pretending to wipe tears from his eyes. Maybe that's how you can't seem to hang on to what's yours. I mean, hell, you couldn't even keep Ryan interested. And I'll have you know that Brendan's skills do not lie in conversation, in knowing how to give space, or whatever it else is that humans think they want these days. Pete steadfastly refused to think about Ryan Ross in a suite three doors down with Patrick. That it was Ryan that Patrick didn't fear. Ryan, who got to take care of him, was wrong beyond belief. If Ryan was siding with the dandies, he was barely human himself. You smell like a goddamn dandy. So do you. Of course, maybe you're the same way, Butcher mused. Maybe that's the real reason Patrick stomped away like an overgrown child. Pete knew better, but he couldn't stop himself. He raced back to the splintered table and picked up a length roughly the size of his forearm, part of the leg. He hefted it and took a step forward. It was embarrassingly easy for Butcher to take the stake away, to hold it against Pete's own neck. Pete's anger had made him sloppy, and his youth made him no match for one as strong as the Butcher. Consider yourself lucky that Briar wants your friend, Butcher said quietly, pressing the stake harder to Pete's throat. That's the only reason he's playing this game, and the only reason I can't kill you right now. That won't always be the case, Pete. Gerard is not going to take responsibility for you, not when he only marked your friends to be an asshole. There is absolutely no reason for him to want to keep them happy. I wish I was going with you. I want to see the look on your face when Gabriel turns you down. He specializes in mind-fucking, but he certainly doesn't waste time in putting things back where he found them. He's a bit of a dick that way.
The sinking feeling in Pete's stomach was expected. He'd felt it often since Joe's stupid plan went into action.
But the fierce shove between his shoulder blades was not. Pete was barely able to keep on his feet. Once he'd gotten his balance back, he looked up to see that the Butcher was gone. Pete shook his head and did what he should have done all along. He reached for the phone and called Andy's cell to let him know how much shit they were in. Brendan glared at his closet, hands on his hips and a lip pulled between his teeth. Part of him wanted to ignore John's order, but the other, more rational part, knew that there was no point. If he'd kicked up a fuss, John would just send Ryan alone, and that simply would not do. In the end, he didn't start packing, just left his suite and wandered down the hallway to the one Ryan and Patrick had disappeared into. He knocked lightly and waited impatiently for the door to open. When Ryan stood in the doorway, Brendan inclined his head toward his own suite. Privacy might be nice, considering the scene that was likely to take place. "Patrick," Ryan began, looking fretfully over his shoulder.
"Is asleep," Brendan said. "It would be best for him to stay that way."
"He can't be wandering around in his condition," Ryan insisted. Brendan looked over at the bed and implanted a quick suggestion.
"Go nowhere by yourself."
When Brendan turned back to Ryan, there was a disapproving look on his face. "His head's already been fucked with enough, I think," he said.
"The alternative is some drug cocktail that Pete and the others have been feeding him," Brendan said with a shrug. "Which would you prefer?"
Ryan didn't really have an answer for that, and he was much more agreeable when Brendan gestured down the hallway again. It was clear that Ryan was brimming with curiosity, but he stayed quiet until the door to their suite was firmly closed.
"What the hell is going on?" he asked. "Pete's made some interesting enemies," Brendan replied, as he sank into one of the padded hotel chairs near the balcony. "Creative ones. You've seen the outcome."
"Yeah," Ryan said tersely.
"There's not a whole lot of Patrick left in there."
"Probably not," Brendan agreed.
"Why is he here? Why would Pete even agree to come within 100 feet of this place?"
Ryan settled himself in the other chair, turning sideways and draping one leg over the arm in an attempt to get more comfortable. Brendan was momentarily distracted by his knee and the way he really wanted to hitch it a little higher.
"Focus!"
Brendan blinked and decided that maybe John was right and there was a time and a place for everything.
"That's kind of funny,"
Brendan said, a smile tugging at his lips.
"I think it was by accident."
"Accident," Ryan said dryly.
"Maybe that's not the right word, but it fits,"
Brendan said with another shrug.
"I don't think that Briar actually intended for things to go as far as they did. You know how he is. He likes to get under everyone's skin."
Brendan was polite enough not to notice how still Ryan went at that.
There was no shame in being afraid of the Deimos, and Brendan wasn't about to draw attention to it.
"He likes to remind everyone that Pete's people belong to Gerard," Ryan said. Brendan nodded.
"I think he just wanted to see how far he could push it," Brendan explained. "But then Joe actually made the deal and... no turning back."
"Joe's not that stupid," Ryan said bluntly, looking at Brendan in disbelief.
"There's no fucking way."
"Well, sweetheart, I was there," Brendan snapped.
"Joe's not that stupid. There's no fucking way."
The words echoed in Brendan's head.
After all these months, he'd hoped that he and Ryan were through with the uphill battles. It rankled him that he'd been so wrong. Ryan glared at him, not impressed with the stupid nickname. Brendan glared back for a few moments before giving it up as childish.
"That's not the best of it,"
Brendan said, his tone allowing the sarcasm to come through loud and clear.
"We've won ourselves a trip to Gabriel's Fair City, courtesy of Patrick Stump."
He watched as that bit of information sunk in.
"I don't want to go,"
Ryan said. He was pulling in on himself, making himself small in the chair. It might have been easier before his growth spurt, but now his lanky arms and legs just wouldn't fit into the space he wanted them to.
"We don't have a choice," Brendan said softly, feeling some of his anger drain away.
Truth was, he didn't want to go either, but he would.
"We do what John tells us to do. He'll be safe, you know."
"I'm not worried about that," Ryan said exasperatedly, as though Brendan should know this somehow. "I'm not even worried about the dreams. I don't like being stared at, Brendan. They're going to stare."
"Yes," Brendan said. "But mostly at Patrick."
"Still," Ryan said. "Too many vampires, not enough humans." Really, that line should have tipped Brendan off to Ryan's train of thought. He shouldn't have been so taken aback with what came out of his boy's mouth next.
"I want Spencer."
"No way," Brendan said, the words out of his mouth before he could consider a better way to phrase them. One look at Ryan's face told him that he should have done so.
"No?"
he asked. "Brendan, I've never asked you for anything, and you just say no without even considering? That is not fair. It's not like he'll be in the way. He can stay with me."
"You have no idea what you're asking for," Brendan said, pulling himself to his feet.
He shook his head, more in disbelief than disappointment.
"I'm asking for my best friend to help me through this," Ryan said. "I know it bothers you."
"Stop right there," Brendan interrupted. "My like or dislike for Spencer Smith is not the issue here."
"Then what is?"
Ryan demanded. His arms were crossed, and he looked about 2 minutes away from leaving.
"The fact that you don't know what you're asking me to do,"
Brendan exclaimed.
"Ryan, if I ask for him, I'm going to be responsible for him. Do you even know what that means?"
There was a momentary flash of guilt in Ryan's eyes, but it didn't last long.
He wasn't going to give up. "If I'll be safe there, then so will Spence," Ryan reasoned.
"We also thought we'd be safe in our own house," Brendan wanted to say.
"You can't plan for everything."
He didn't say either of those things, just leaned close to Ryan, fingers digging into the arms of his chair.
"If he so much as gets a hangnail, it's my ass on the line," he said. "If he falls, gets sick, sees something that upsets him, that's all on me. You need to ask yourself if that's acceptable to you."
Ryan didn't take nearly as much time to think it over as Brendan had hoped.
"I want him with me," he said.
"Fine," Brendan said tiredly.
"Your wish is my command."
The knock at the door wasn't entirely unexpected, but John wished that Brendan had gotten there sooner. Maybe then he wouldn't have had to spend the last 10 minutes with Spencer, glaring at him sleepily from the bed.
"We need to talk," Brendan said,
his face serious as he stepped back, urging John outside.
"Ryan has a request."
John could tell that Brendan wasn't happy about it. Though his voice was neutral, the set of his mouth betrayed his thoughts.
"And?"
John prompted.
"He wants Spencer," Brendan said. "It seems that being around so many vampires is distasteful."
"And it seems that you're willfully misreading the problem," John remarked. He knew Brendan wasn't actually this stupid, but hurt feelings were difficult to process, especially for them. They weren't accustomed to allowing it to happen, and so had no practice with it. Brendan didn't appear to appreciate John's insight. "He'll be safe enough there," John said. He was confident about that, would never jeopardize Spencer's safety just to twist the situation to his benefit. Gabe hadn't reported any trouble lately, nothing on the scale of what had started in John's own city a few short weeks ago. "Keep Spencer inside as much as possible, don't let him wander, and bring him home at the first sign of danger." The look of shock on Brendan's face was priceless. "Just like that," Brendan said. "Ryan asks and you just..." "My reasons are my own," John said, his eyes straying to the closed door of his suite. Spencer was no doubt still sitting in the middle of the bed, waiting impatiently. John could hear his heartbeat and knew he was still awake, still ready to argue for the sake of argument. Yes, John's reasons were his own, and if he wanted to give Spencer some experience with what it meant to be part of this world, well, no one could blame him. Every human experience Spencer had was one more that divided him from John. He was not going to lose Spencer to that. "Keep him safe," John reiterated. Brendan nodded and turned away, heading for his suite. John watched him disappear inside before heading back into his own. Spencer was right where he'd left him. "Something's wrong," Spencer said. The look of irritation had given way to one of worry. John wasn't surprised. Spencer was observant. "Ryan never did come back, and you wouldn't tell me where he was. Now Brendan shows up? I know something's wrong." Spencer was also frustratingly codependent. "Yes," John said. "Trouble, courtesy of Pete Wentz." John sat on the edge of the bed and explained what had happened to Patrick and his newfound connection to Ryan. "You're sending him there alone?" Spencer asked. He was clearly unimpressed with the situation. "Of course not," John said. "You can go with them if you want." Spencer was still for a moment before he threw his arms around John's neck, settling himself comfortably in his lap. "I thought you'd say no," Spencer said. "You know, that it was too dangerous or something. Or say that you just didn't want me to leave the city." John might have been insulted, but with his suddenly shifting priorities, he found he didn't have it in him. "Listen to Brendan," he advised. "You'll be safe with him. Gabriel runs a tight ship." Spencer kissed a line down John's neck, and John could feel the smile on his lips. No doubt Spencer thought John was finally getting it after weeks of arguing for a little space. John probably should have felt bad for manipulating the situation, but he didn't. He didn't even feel guilty for taking his reward, pulling Spencer firmly against his chest before flipping the boy onto his back. He pushed Spencer's knees a little higher and couldn't help but laugh at the way the boy shuddered. Joe wasn't able to make it to the bathroom before he threw up what little he'd had for dinner. He hadn't eaten much, just a truly awful burger that Andy had managed to get from down the street. But it was enough to make a pretty big mess. If he were in the actual Dandy safe house, Joe would have almost thought it was funny. Let the vampire lovers clean up yet another vampire-related mess. The only thing that gave him a twinge of guilt was the fact that the hotel employees likely had no idea what the hell was going on under their noses. He thought briefly of being mean, of calling down to the front desk and asking if housekeeping would clean puke at 1 a.m. For what these fancy rooms cost at night, they'd better. He didn't bother to call, though.
Maybe the smell of vomit was his punishment. After all, he'd done something so monumentally stupid that there wasn't even a name for it. What the hell had he been thinking? Well, he'd been thinking about Patrick, about the mess that had been made of his head, and the astonished look on Walker's face after he'd seen the damage. He'd been thinking he'd do anything to get his friend back, to fix the horrible things that had been done to him. All of that was still true. But now that he was here, behind enemy lines, he couldn't stop the selfish little voice that kept asking, "Now who is going to save you?" It wasn't entirely fair, but it was still a valid question. One thing he knew for sure was that Joe would have to honor his half of the bargain. Briar was a vampire, and they weren't known for just letting people go, or for willingly letting the terms of an agreement slide. Not unless there was something for them in it. Joe would fight, of course. He wasn't young and easily lied to. He would never entertain romantic notions. He just wasn't into dudes as a rule, and bloodsuckers on principle. And he certainly wouldn't just lie down and die. Not even for Patrick. With a sigh, Joe went into the bathroom and found some hand towels. He wet them in the sink and began cleaning the vomit from the expensive carpet. He didn't allow himself to look at the balcony, his only means of escape. He'd made his choice. He'd pay the price. Briar was in no mood to talk when he came back out of his suite. The others fell quietly into line behind him as they filed through the lobby. The trip to the airport was spent in silence, but the vampire could still feel everyone's eyes on him, even as he looked impassively out the window. Let them stare as much as they wanted, so long as no one asked him any questions. And so long as the crazy one stayed off in his own little world, slumped over in his seat, head on Ryan's shoulder. As they made their way to the tarmac, Briar saw Wentz's missing human waiting nervously, a duffel bag at his feet. "Just for the record, this is a very, very bad idea," he said. "Yes," Briar agreed, the first words he'd said to anyone. "Also for the record, we've already covered this. Get on the fucking plane, Andrew." If the trip there was tense and trying, the arrival was agony. The others all stayed on the plane as Briar alone made his way down the stairs, his back ramrod straight as he went to meet Gabriel and his entourage. Gerard was there, hands in his pockets, as was a nervous-looking Mikey. Schechter was there, too. And while Briar had expected him to weigh in somehow, he hadn't thought the elder vampire would show up so soon, especially since he didn't make a habit of leaving his own territory. Frank was nowhere to be seen, and judging by the strain on Gerard's face, tonight was probably one of Frank's bad days. He seemed to have as many of those as he did good ones. Briar wondered if the paranoia had gotten worse, or if Gerard had been forced to drive out to the city limits to find Frank staring at the welcome sign, like he usually did when he disappeared for hours on end. He was a lot of work, a bundle of psychological issues, and the physical drive to return home, not that he really knew where that was icing on that particular cake. Briar didn't envy Gerard any of the trouble. There was a reason why vampires who'd gone through that kind of trauma were usually put down. When Briar got to the little group, he slipped his hands into his pockets and flicked his gaze from Gabriel to the elder vampire beside him. The looks on their faces were cold, while the others did their best to at least appear neutral, not sure what to make of the Deimos and his betrayal. Do you remember what I said I'd do if I ever saw Pete Wentz again? Schechter asked, breaking both the silence and the staring contest. You said you'd kill him, Briar replied. Actually, he'd gone into much detail about what would happen, but there was something to be said for brevity. The punch was not wholly unexpected. And yet you offered him protection, Schechter yelled, the loss of control an uncharacteristic thing in so public a place. He flexed the fingers of his left hand. There was blood on one of his knuckles. Briar's mouth was bleeding, lip and tongue split against his teeth. Briar turned slightly and spat out a mouthful of blood before wiping lightly at his lip. Like it or not, he said, trying for a neutral tone of voice, though that might well provoke more than an accusatory one. Wentz belongs to Beckett, and there is a debt there that has not yet been erased. He was walking a fine line with that one. Schechter did not like to be reminded of his debts, especially the one concerning Beckett and the fledgling he'd been talked into keeping. All I did, Briar continued, was fulfill the obligation how I saw fit. Maybe if he phrased it that way, made it sound as though he'd done a great favor, he'd get out of this relatively unscathed. Beckett is gone, Schechter said, his voice hard and unwilling to yield. There was no other way Briar would be able to deflect the blame for his actions. The only other thing to do was appeal to their sense of honor. Failing that, he'd have to actually be honest for once. The debt remains the same, Briar pressed. We play fast and loose with the rules when it suits us, but expect others to follow them to the letter. They've noticed. They're starting to rebel. Why else would they have gone after that boy when he'd been marked by a dandy of Gerard's rank? Out of town or not, it doesn't matter. There was a time when even the knowledge would have kept everyone away, never mind the actual law. Deflect all you want, but I know where this is coming from, Gabriel said, cutting Briar off from saying anything more. You're doing it for his friend. Yes. Briar said simply, resorting to Plan C. He made an offer, and I accepted it. Be angry if you want to be. Punish me if you need to, but I've done nothing wrong. Nothing wrong? Schechter asked incredulously. You can stand there and go on about the debt I owed Beckett, which you will never speak of again. And you can talk about honor and the recent troubles in Walker City, but you're willfully misrepresenting the situation, Briar. You know as well as we do that Gerard never intended to keep them. He doesn't want them here any more than they want to be here. Briar tore his eyes away from the furious vampire, looking first to Gabriel and then to Gerard, who had so far been silent even though his actions were at the center of the trouble. Gerard? Schechter prompted. It served a purpose at the time, Gerard said. It doesn't anymore. So are you going to take it back? Briar challenged. Do you plan on bleeding them out until what you gave them is gone? No, Gerard replied. Because you gave them safe passage. Yes, well, safe passage is all he gave them, Gabriel said. And soon he won't even have that to offer. Everyone leaves tomorrow evening. It would be right now if you had enough time to get back before the sun. I won't be seeing anyone on that plane. Briar had warned Pete and Joe that Gabriel likely wouldn't help them, but he'd done his part. fulfilled his half of the bargain. They couldn't blame him for this, not even when he accepted the reward he had coming to him. Still, he tried the only thing left to him. He might not intend to keep Joe for long, but he'd be much easier to control if he at least got something in return for giving up his freedom.
You love a good mystery, Briar told Gabriel. Don't you at least want to know who did it?
Only to congratulate them, Gabriel replied. He turned away, clearly finished with Briar.
When they leave, Robert, you're going with them. I'll be kind enough to allow you to pack what you want to bring with you.
He'd known that they'd be angry. He'd even anticipated some sort of punishment. Violence, demotion of rank, lack of trust, even. Though it had teased at the edge of his worries, Briar had never actually believed that Gabriel would banish him, or that Schechter wouldn't be there to take him back. They'd lived centuries together, and even when they'd settled in the cities, Briar had always been able to go from one to the other, had always known that there would always be a place he could call home.
As he watched the others climb into one of the dark sedans, he was left trying to believe the words that were running through his head.
Robert Briar didn't belong anywhere anymore.
The meeting took longer than Pete thought it would.
How much pomp and circumstance could there be when greeting someone you hadn't seen in maybe a few weeks?
He leaned closer to his little window and tried to see if he could make out what was being said by reading their lips.
That had never been a skill of his, and he was left disappointed, even though he hadn't really thought it would work. The punch to the mouth shocked him so much that Pete couldn't help but whisper, "Shit!"
It also made Pete realize that he'd actually held a tiny bit of hope after all. And now it was gone. All conversation around him stopped then, and both Brendan and Andy crowded around for a better look, despite the fact that there were three other perfectly good windows they could have gotten to more easily.
"Well, this will be the shortest trip in the history of ever," Brendan remarked.
"Not funny,"
Pete snapped, glaring up at the older vampire. Brendan just shrugged his shoulders and went back to looking out the window, watching with an attention that Pete had only ever seen focused on Ryan.
It really hadn't been funny, but Pete doubted that had been Brendan's intention. His lack of tact wasn't usually played for laughs, and this time he'd just been stating a fact. Gabriel had no intention of helping Patrick. The thought of Patrick staying that way, so conflicted, so terrified and angry and lost, was more than he could take. What would happen over time if nothing could be done to fix the mess his mind had been reduced to? Would he hurt himself? Hurt others in a misguided attempt to save the world?
Brendan scrambled back to his seat when Briar turned back to the plane, all but shoving Andy aside in his haste. Andy had no choice but to sit in the empty seat next to Pete, or be caught standing when Briar came back inside. There were a few minutes of awkward silence in the cabin, as everyone tried not to make eye contact with one another, or to blurt out opinions on what they'd just seen. It only got worse when Briar actually stepped inside, a dark look on his face and a spot of blood on his lip.
"I never promised you anything," he said simply,
all his attention focused on Joe, seemingly sidestepping the entire display outside. Pete hadn't expected much else. Even the pained look on Joe's face, the realization that he'd sold himself for nothing. wasn't unexpected.
"We're being allowed to stay until tomorrow evening,"
Briar continued, addressing everyone once Joe turned away and the staring contest didn't seem so interesting anymore.
"We should consider ourselves lucky to even get that. We wouldn't make it anywhere else before sunrise."
"You can't feud with a pile of ash," Pete said, well aware that he was walking a fine line.
"In your case, they'd make an exception,"
Briar remarked.
"You should thank John's people. They're the only reason either of us is still breathing."
Pete's eyes cut over to the row where Brendan was sitting, the question at the tip of his tongue.
The way Briar had said it, his tone of voice and the barely noticeable secretive smile on his lips, made Pete think that there was more than just the regular respect due to an envoy. What made him so special? It wasn't until Patrick made a quiet sound that Pete turned to look at Ryan and Spencer, who sat beside him. Maybe it had nothing to do with Brendan at all. Spencer was here, too. Terrifying John's boy was probably against the rules.
"I can't say I'm particularly thrilled to sleep under his roof,"
Brendan remarked,
"considering how happy he is." "Feel free to dig a hole in the ground, then, because there's no way you're getting a room in this city,"
Briar replied.
"I'm sure Ryan will appreciate sleeping next to a mound of dirt."
And really, that settled that. Pete was hardly surprised. He had no intention of leaving Patrick in some random location either. Gabriel was a man of his word. And if he said they'd leave tomorrow evening, they would.
To say it was awkward to walk into the hotel that served as Gabriel's safe house was an understatement. Ryan busied himself with taking care of Patrick, though he didn't actually have to do anything other than help him walk in a straight line. Brendan had given him another suggestion in the car, and that, combined by the weariness Ryan could see in his face, made Patrick easy to handle for the moment. He really wasn't looking forward to more nightmares or hallucinations, though. While Patrick might not get up and run away, he'd certainly start yelling. On the plane, Brendan had gotten him to keep his freakouts confined to his head. But that had been far too creepy. To take away the only avenue Patrick had to express his fear was wrong. It seemed as though everyone had come out to see Briar's walk of shame through the front lobby and up to the elevators. He'd already had permanent quarters there, for the time being at least. So he didn't have to stand awkwardly at the front desk like the rest of them while they waited for keycards to be handed out. Most of them fell into pairs easily, though in Ryan's case it was a trio. He and Patrick and Spencer. He really wasn't surprised to find that they'd been put in a small room. One that was obviously rarely used and wasn't all that nice. He didn't really care. All he wanted was to get Patrick settled so he didn't have to watch him waver back and forth on his feet as he fought Brendan's suggestion to not run away. Once the door was locked, Ryan directed Patrick to one of the beds, pulling down the blankets and pressing a hand firmly between his shoulders, suggesting he crawl in. There was some resistance, but in the end, he had no choice but to give in. No doubt, Brendan's voice was replaying in his head. "You will do whatever Ryan tells you to." "I don't know what I expected," Spencer said, sinking down on the other double bed. "But it certainly wasn't this." "I know," Ryan replied. "But it's not like any of this is normal." "No," Spencer conceded.
But I sure as hell didn't think Briar would get kicked out for his efforts.
No one did, Ryan said.
Know what's stupid? I actually thought that, yeah, Gabriel would be angry, but that he'd fix this in the end.
His eyes met Patrick's across the room, and he couldn't help but feel pity. This man had been his friend, had saved his life, and now what was left of him? A babbling, crazy person who couldn't even remember the real world.
He's a vampire,
Patrick said softly as he rubbed at his head. He'd been doing that a lot. Ryan could only imagine the headache he must have. They might walk and talk like men, but they aren't. They don't help because they don't care. They'll eat you up just like they did everyone else.
Patrick's eyes fell closed, and he rubbed at his eyelids next.
If you're lucky, you won't be around to see it.
Ryan?
Spencer asked.
It's not his fault, Ryan said, though he knew his face was flushed hot, a little embarrassed at having been called out. He didn't think it was just about his mistaken assumption about Gabriel. Patrick had watched Ryan and Brendan like a hawk before they'd boarded the plane.
Poor, confused Patrick, Patrick said, voice taking on a sing-song tone. Poor, confused Patrick doesn't know anything.
He laughed.
But he does, you know. You're just not listening. I'll have to bury you next.
Patrick, stop, Ryan said sharply. Patrick tried to fight it. Ryan could see him struggle to keep his mouth open. But in the end, the order to do as Ryan said took precedent, and his mouth snapped shut.
That's creepy, Spencer said, looking around Ryan's shoulder. Ryan took one look at the laughing expression in Patrick's eyes and agreed.
It was the sense of unease that got him. There was nothing to outwardly make him worry. The evening was quiet, crickets chirping softly, the breeze blowing just enough to ruffle his hair. He stood in front of the hotel, staring off into the darkness, and couldn't get over the foreboding that clawed at his stomach. Something was coming. Something terrible. It came in the form of a box, 4 inches square. White, glossy, innocuous. The pink tie inside was bloodstained, shredded. Ryan knew instantly who it belonged to. I'm sorry. The words brought Ryan's head up, though his hands were still twisted in what was left of the tie. Pete was standing there, hands shoved in the pockets of his tattered hoodie. His face was streaked with dirt, and there was a weariness in his eyes.
Why are you sorry? Ryan asked.
Pete didn't get to answer. The next moment, Ryan was bolting upright in his bed, heart pounding and chest tight. He clawed at the blankets, choking back a noise as he realized where he was. He pressed his hands against his face as the last day came back to him. Patrick. Pete. Briar. Gabriel. He turned to see Spencer, still asleep beside him, and Patrick in the next bed. It was just a dream, Ryan told himself. Not everything had to be a premonition. Brendan didn't even own a pink tie. It was stupid to worry. Unable to shake the uneasiness of the dream, Ryan scooted a bit closer to Spencer and curled up beneath the blanket. In the darkness, the red glow of the clock on the bedside table glowed brightly. 4:57. Sunrise in less than an hour.